It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
Did Donald Trump go far enough to eventually drain that swamp that needed to be done? And the answer to that is going to be a clear no. I think we can answer that right up front here, because the establishment is striking back pretty hard right now. I think a lot of people are questioning here, not just, you know, we see the day-to-day, the hour-by-hour splattering of news, of course, and you know, there's not an hour that goes by there isn't another bulletin of more fraud being found somewhere in some state and in some district and some county. And it's an avalanche, I guess, of news and scandals on this election. I've been thinking in past days, where are the big Republicans in all of this? It's oddly silent in a lot of areas, a little too silent. And actually, you hear it's again, as I referenced in the first hour of Viewpoint, it's the calm before the storm, I think we're all sensing right now, and the other shoe to drop yet, that we're all feeling something's going to happen here. It was expressed to me many times, we're headed somewhere. Is it a confrontational moment in the country? And it depends what happens if one side does give in to the other side eventually, because we are clearly on two opposite sides of this conversation. I think what a lot of people wonder is, why can't everybody see this level of fraud? You know, we started talking about the Dominion machines and all of that up front, and what you see Arizona legislatures come out. But you're seeing this constant in a lot of these states, and you're seeing look at the problems in Nevada. Look at the problems in Georgia, or the problems in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, for sure. So all of these swing states, and the question we have to ask ourselves is, was it set up to fail? I mean, and I think a lot of people would say, yes, it was. The president talked about this months ago. Welcome to Viewpoint Presents. This is Malcolm, along with Michael Johns. From the very, very beginning, we knew this was all going to happen. It was predicted. If there was a preview or a trailer we had watched about this election, and we had watched it several months ago, it would have been exactly what we're faced with right now. Yet, there's nothing happened. We're not fixing the problem. We're not fixing the system. We're not fixing anything. We're just at each other's throats. And it seems like we're headed somewhere now with every day that moves that much closer to the 14th. We're getting past the point of no return now for whatever's going to be, buddy.
Malcolm, good to be back with you. Episode 19 of one of the most dynamic, fastest growing radio shows and podcasts in America. And we sure have chosen a critical moment in time to have launched this, because I think we've covered it, kind of with each consecutive week, some of the most dramatic and in many cases, incredible developments in our country that are baffling the American people. And the American people are looking for some clarity of thought right now, and they're not getting it from leaders they traditionally would turn to. They want to know, was there fraud in this election or was there not? They're not getting answer question really from independent institutions or even conservative ones. Yes, there was. It's demonstrable. It's overwhelming. It's compelling. And is it or is it not election altering or outcome altering? That's something, you know, I'm counseling people to sort of stay away from speculating on. Because one of the ways you lose these debates in the public arena is by getting ahead of evidence and facts and speculating. So even if things look suggestive, like why would you partially rig an election? You would more likely do it all chips in. I think we keep our positioning in line with the evidence that's emerging. And that evidence is so unbelievably overwhelming. And there's so many questions that need to be answered that's where we're at. I mean, we've got these have to be taken seriously. And then the question is taken seriously by whom? Because in a just, logical, functioning governmental system, the answer would be the U.S. Department of Justice and the FBI.
Wow.
Who have criminal and civil oversight matters on elections, traditionally they've taken that responsibility pretty seriously.
Okay.
They've unearthed a lot of those questions, but it's not happening this time.
Let me ask you this here. Let's go on this on the assumption that what you just said, the evidence is so overwhelming. Now, let's put that out there right now. And I know there are some people who would argue that on the left, clearly, but it does appear the evidence is very overwhelming. If that's the case, Michael, let's talk about the Republican leadership that have been sort of hands off. It's like a hot potato conversation almost. You have those that are milky in the middle, and they're sort of, they're not wanting, just in case Trump pulls it off, they're not wanting to really piss him off, but they're staying out of the limelight to really make a commitment. And you really don't have a lot of these big conservative organizations stepping up either to say, you know, this really can't happen in our country. It seems to me like there's a whole lot of Republicans and conservatives going along with the charade. Tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah, you're right. And the only thing you failed to mention there, which is the real takeaway, mm-hmm. is that those are all the characteristics of a failure of leadership. Mm-hmm. Leadership is being able to boldly stand up on issues in moments of importance when it's not terribly popular to do so. Mm-hmm. We have elected individuals and put people in charge of major institutions in this country that are influential mm-hmm. that duck and are afraid to speak boldly about certain truths. They're very easily intimidated by opposition. They're afraid of making waves. They're not ultimately too predisposed for moving, mobilizing, and leading a country in at a moment where leadership is most desperately needed. So I look at the situation right now and say, well, Trump's leading. Good for him. That's why I supported him day one. That's why I still support him. That's why I'm still holding out hope he's going to have four more years. I think it'd be an incredible positive development for the country. Mm-hmm. But to have an attorney general, as we just had this week, who has not, to my knowledge, to this day, interviewed one of who are now hundreds of whistleblowers who have signed affidavits documenting with great specificity allegations of illegality and fraud. What is an affidavit? I mean, it's a legal – this is – so when they say there's no evidence, an affidavit is definitionally evidence, okay? You sign the affidavit because you're going to ask a judge to admit it as evidence. Right. That's one of the big lies being perpetuated in mainstream media.
That's a great point you just say, Michael. That's a beautiful point because you do hear those words a lot, no evidence. What did you guess how many affidavits there are right now that the right has? I mean, it's got to be
hundreds.
I bet it's in the thousands now.
Yeah, I don't know if it's quite that number yet, but only because, you know, a lot of cases you got multiple individuals who simultaneously witnessed the same thing, but the allegations are extraordinary. And by the way, they're largely undisputed when you really drill down to it. So we've got sort of two types of coverage. Mm. You have media that are, which is why I'm cautioning people, which I think are the vast majority of Americans, you want a free and fair election, regardless of where your political
That's
views
right.
are.
Amen.
Don't misspeak on this, because the media are looking for examples of misstatements that they can simultaneously correct in the public domain. And the whole goal of that is to delegitimize the broader point that there was documentable substantial fraud in this election. And I've seen this a number of times, like a few people early on when they came out, when I started, you and I, in fact, began speaking, and I did in other venues as well, about the Smartmatic relationship with Dominion. Some people had described it incorrectly. And then these articles came out debunking that, but failing to point out all of the things that had been said that were actually reported. So you got this narrative going on in media that there was no fraud, that somehow this is just some desperate effort by one ego-driven man who wants to hold on to the presidency. Totally wrong. Half the country views this election in question. 70% of Republicans don't believe it was free and fair. And as far as evidence, which I could go on for hours about, let me just give you one little tidbit here. Let's just take what happened in Georgia. These are demonstrable, documented facts. 2,056 felons ineligible to vote, voted. 66,248 people, that's an extraordinary number, which suggests coordination, under the age of 18 voted. Not eligible age, they voted, 66,248. 2,423 people not even registered to vote voted. That
it's astounding.
How did that means with those mail-in, I assume there were some mail-ins, but like these are the questions that we need to draw on. 1,043 people who voted didn't have a documented residential address. They used a PO box, illegal under Georgia state law. 4,926 voted past the registration date. They were ineligible to vote. They voted anyway. 10,315 people came back from the dead in Georgia because of their enthusiasm for Joe Biden and his dynamic, awe-inspiring candidacy.
Oh,
to vote
my
for
God,
him.
It was a killer. It's a killer.
10,000. By the way, you know, these are all, we talk about these in terms because we're so focused on the outcome of the election, understandably, but these are all crimes. 395 Georgia votes in two different states. 15,700 had moved out of the state, no longer lived in Georgia, voted there anyway. 40,279 voted in counties where they had not re-registered. So just ballpark here, you know, that's, you know, like over, considerably over 100,000 votes. And that's like sort of what's uncovered as of now, with just a month of some fairly limited scrutiny on this, because you realize in an ideal world, you would have media digging into this, you would have, you know, all these institutions that have arisen to say they defend the civil right of voting, they would be digging into it. Simultaneously, they're out there because they want Trump gone, saying there was nothing. There's no fraud. None of these things ever happened. What I just said is a complete illusion. We're not dealing in it. It's like an alternative reality they're functioning in.
Yeah.
You know, and they are the ones, by the way, operating in almost a conspiracy world. Okay.
Well, that's the biggest piece of evidence you throw out there right now. I mean, it says plenty. You know, we talked about a lot of the numbers in the first hour as well, Michael, how the disparity and but like you say, when they say there's no evidence, it's an outright lie, number one. For instance, let me bring back A.G. Barr. You were just speaking about Attorney General Barr. In fact, he says, and I quote here, to date, we have not seen fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in this election. He told the Associated Press that last week in an interview he had. So let me ask you this. Initially, when these crimes and, like you say, a lot of the affidavits and the evidence started to spiral here, and it's been a spiral in effect, and it started to really mount up to be. So then you have to say, well, because, you know, initially, OK, maybe these are one offs, and the establishment players have attempted to push this off as a lot of one offs. Well, yeah. We get election fraud in every election. That was the catch all conversation I was hearing. And then it's like, well, but we have all of this over here. And then you see what A.G. Barr says. So here's the thing. I think you got to then ask yourself, what about this? Is this a concerted effort? I mean, let's talk about a grand plan here. Back to the conspiracy sort of thing here. I mean, it's not a theory almost, but did this really happen? Is this a concerted effort in your opinion, Mike? I mean, do you have any sense or any gut feeling that says, well, I mean, like I said, a bunch of guys come out of a smoky filled room and say, ah, we got them this time. We got them by the, you know what, here we go. Let's put this out there. I mean, probably not something like that, but what's the alternative? I mean, are these just one-offs that people are trying to take the country down, or is there a concerted effort here to pull this off, Michael?
Well, we rely on the Department of Justice for neutral evaluation, investigation. You know, one thing I'll say in support of like federal charges usually is, which is pretty broadly known by prosecutors and defense attorneys, is very rarely does the federal government bring charges against someone and lose, which is why when you see federal charges, it's like, whoops, that everyone has a presumption of innocence. But let me just say that the standard usually employed by federal prosecutors is very high. Like they really want to overwhelm.
You don't want to go up against them because they have all the tools and the power and the money to take your ass down. So for
That's your single biggest nightmare is getting into any tug of war with this hugely influential institution.
They call that Uncle Sam. You know that, Michael. That's called Uncle Sam. Right. He's big, you know. He wears a tall hat, buddy. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it becomes difficult for some people, you know, like me, we start speaking out about the Obama administration and our Tea Party movement. Next thing you know, we've got, you know, the entire IRS targeting the movement, targeting donors, yep. demanding documents they weren't entitled to have, denying, you know, and so here we are in this current present tense scenario. We're relying on this institution to step up. You quoted Barr, who said, to date, we have not seen fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in the election. Well, on a technical basis, and by the way, I served in the first Bush administration with Barr, so I interacted a little bit with him. I had a great high opinion of him at that time, and it's not so high right now because he knows and is smart enough to know that, firstly, you don't comment about fraud unless you've investigated the fraud. Okay. So yeah, if you don't investigate it, you're not going to see any evidence of it. It should be true. And of these whistleblowers, none of them have been contacted by anyone at the DOJ, which has entire departments and has a civil and criminal department committed to these issues and to voter integrity. Clearly, they have not taken it seriously to answer your question. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he correctly says to date, which is the most important part of that sentence, which means it doesn't mean they're not going to. But he should have enough political, and does have, and knowing that he has enough political.
So why did he do it? Why did he do it?
I don't know why he's talking to the Associated Press at all. If you're sitting there and you have allegations of our entire representative democracy being both infiltrated and decimated at the core, right? That's what we're talking about. This is not 2000 with Bush v. Gore, where we had, you know, an incident where you look and go, well, that's unusual. We should probably avoid that. This is systematic, the allegations.
Yeah.
And so, and if you really go through and look at the attorneys on the Trump team and the things they've alleged, it's extraordinarily terrifying. And it should be a fire alarm for the Department of Justice.
Yeah. Well, the fact he came out, it should be. But the fact he came out with all that.
So firstly, he should be focused on, with almost singularity in my view, because I don't believe there's anything that's more threatening to the administration of justice in our country than an accountable, fair, representative government. Once we've reached the point, which is the fear and the reason I think you and I put so much seriousness on this, once we break through this threshold that we've never, to my knowledge, crossed, where individuals can obtain elected office without necessarily winning these elections, we're in the uncharted territory, though Nixon would say he might have won that 1960 election against JFK. But even that was regional in nature. We're now talking about the integrity of our voting systems. We're talking about processes. I mean, procedurally alone, how is it possible that these, let's just take the video that was released this week in Georgia with these big suitcases filled with ballots. Well, who dropped those off?
Mm-hmm.
Whose suitcases were they? Has anyone, like to me, if you're running voting integrity or you're any degree of commitment to it at all, are you immediately looking at that video that OWN, which is covering this with great degree of credibility and seriousness, released? Wouldn't you be down there either wanting to ascertain who was responsible for what appeared to be criminal activity?
What about the USPS drones?
Or what's given
what
the benefit
those?
Of the doubt? Yeah, well, let me get to that. Or to give them the benefit of the doubt, get down there, investigate, and explain to the American people why that was not criminal behavior. It's because I always noticed in government, and I think I mentioned this to you once, that the biggest concern was always a disconnect in trust between the people and the government. In fact, I wrote a line for President Bush said that was, a government worthy of the people's trust must first trust the government, which he loved and utilized repeatedly, that it was a mutual trust relationship. And that's what keeps the whole country stable. Once you lose that trust, which we're running the risk of losing.
Oh, it's gone. It's not.
I'm understating that. It's gone.
Okay? Yeah, it's gone.
The problem now is that once it's gone and your government, in the eyes of American people, has stolen from you, taken from you, denied your rights, your sense of reciprocal commitment and responsibility to that government in turn psychologically diminishes. That's chaos. Mm-hmm. So this thing, firstly, the strategic options available to the president are fairly limited. You know, because the first thing that went through my mind is, you know, wow, a month, your attorney general hasn't done anything. The president's out there acknowledging he hasn't done anything. Do you have trust in attorney general? He was asked.
He was questioned on that.
Ask me in a few weeks.
Ask me in a bunch of weeks. Yeah.
No, don't ask me. We don't have a few weeks.
Yeah. Well, that was the message. That was the firing shot right there. He put it out there. Some people are saying should he fire Barr right now? Would it be beneficial if he fired him?
That's what I'm getting at, is because it's a position that requires Senate confirmation. That's obviously not an option. So you would need 60 votes in the Senate. Difficult. I don't care who you put up. That would be difficult to get. You clearly want someone who would have a singular focus on this and expertise in it and a sense of urgency. So if you did terminate Barr, you can do interim appointments. So I think it's over 200 days, but there are certain people who are not eligible for that. I think that special prosecutor is definitely an option. If you can get someone who has demonstrable expertise in voter fraud, has a commitment and has prosecuted these cases and can move with urgency, why would you not do that at this point?
Well, while we're on Barr a moment here, and you know, the thing that is so ironic and not lost on me, and I talked about this point on the Voice of a Nation during the week, is that, you know, 90% of the time, we can't get the Department of Justice to talk when we need them to talk. And here's a time where we don't need him to talk unless he's got something, you know, that's positive, encouraging to say. And the guy comes out on a limb and says, well, you know, to date, we have not seen it. Well, no, I mean, come on. And then to date,
and you know, the media is loving it.
They love it.
They'll spin that in a second. The two-day part of it. Was omitted in most of the cut. He didn't get the last word out.
It was omitted. You kid? They were all over it like flies on. It was all over it. I seen the news. I can always tell because my news wire will light up immediately. Bing and a bing and a bing and a bing and story after story after story. And if that's not enough with AG Barr, you know, I really, you know, a lot of us were fans as conservatives of Attorney General William Barr and probably excited early on to see him put an experienced guy like that in there after his first go around. I believe he was 77th, I think, first shot, Michael, if I remember correctly. This time he's 85th Attorney General, but I think the number is 77th. And it's interesting that, you know, we've lost such faith now in the man. And I'm wondering what he's really up to. Like, is he just so burnt out of the whole thing? He's just saying, has he given up? And I wonder myself. Now, he throws the Patriots, he throws conservatives a bone, or he thinks it's a bone, by appointing.
I'm tired of the politics. Don't throw us any bones. Why ask him? Seriously, like, I think I speak bone. For you in saying this. We're not asking for any favors here. We're just saying, do your job.
Prosecuting
criminal level activity in a federal presidential election is pretty much about as serious of a focus and commitment that the U.S. Department of Justice can have. So we had all these things literally on November 3rd that emerged. Certainly by November 4, you're waking up with missionary zeal to get to the bottom of it. And that obviously did not happen. Now you're getting the question of motive. And now, you know, I get to this uncomfortable position of just having to speculate. I think the issue, if you ask my opinion, is that this Department of Justice is so filled with individuals who want Trump gone. And that's been demonstrably true for 4 years, that the assistant attorney generals and others who he would turn to on his team have no political will to pursue this. They also have a self-interest, which I pointed out this past week, is that they're chess players. They feel if Trump gets four more years, people like I are going to, which I will, are going to say it's time to clear out DOJ and it's time to clear out the deep state. It's time to clear out the intel agencies. So if you're in those positions, you try to tell me it's not a little bit persuasive, the fact that a Trump victory would likely lead to your termination?
Well, it's not time. It's past time. Here's the question that I think we should talk about right now, Michael, is why didn't he do this 4 years ago?
Well, the details on that are important. Remember, he appointed Jeff Sessions, who I thought was a great Jeff Sessions was a great senator, and he had all the right visions, and he was quick to endorse Trump, first major elected official to do so. So his role in the administration, I mean, was a positive one, but his area of focus was, in my judgment, really on those immigration and border security issues. It would have been logical to have put him in, say, a DHS or in a senior functional role related to the wall. But no, he wanted the AG job. And then, of course, we went through the recusal issue. And really, since recusal, which led to his defeat ultimately in this recent Alabama Senate race, and that's how badly people view it and the ramifications of it. Since that recusal, and all of and then the complete Mueller Comey era, that entire process mm-hmm. was so it really led to 4 years under which this president has not really had the opportunity to have a functioning, justice committed, depoliticized Department of Justice. So, yeah. You know, you go through this Matthew Whitaker, real problems under him. He only had the acting role. He never mm-hmm. cleared it out. And Barr, yeah, I just got to be honest. I mean, you know, he's been in there for a year. Going on a year. I mean, I haven't really seen, I think it's an improvement over what it existed, but we need bold action. And to not have this Durham report out, to not have accountability on Obamagate, to now to have an entire federal election. I mean, this is going to be this guy's legacy. He's going to be the attorney general under whom a U.S. presidential election had the most documentable, demonstrable, and non-prosecuted acts of criminality. I wouldn't want that legacy hanging over my head. Yeah. So I think he's a good man. I think he's an honest man. Yeah. I don't think he has the team around him that I think that they're saying, look, if you're going to go after that, I'll resign. Well, that's listen, kind of the dynamic of it.
The establishment needs more than good and honest men. It needs men that are going to be willing to stand up to this barrage of BS and to be able to pull this establishment down and, you know, eventually drain a swamp that is going to be resistant no matter what we do. We're going to take a pause here. And then you see this bone that Michael says he doesn't want the bone. I don't know if it's a ham bone or a chicken bone or a turkey bone, but it's certain damn well a bone that he throws out there with John Durham and the special counsel business. You know, I get so fit to be tied with this whole conversation. And I referenced them and I did a show on this past week that was called The Keystone Cops, A.G. Barr, The Keystone Cops Head Stooge. We'll take a pause now. We'll be back in just a moment with more Viewpoint Presents.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
My fellow Americans, our mission here at AmericaOutloud.com is clear. We're here to defend our founding values and principles at a moment when they are under unprecedented assault. And to cover the news objectively and offer intelligent commentary on the challenges we face as a nation. You can tune in and join our family of listeners 24/7 in this vital crusade. Our apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa. Find us on iHeartRadio or our world-class media player. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all. It was always going to be a tall order, this whole thing about draining a swamp. And a lot of people probably thought that was just another cliche or whatever, you get an office, because let's face it, people, we've heard that from plenty of candidates. But we've heard a lot of things from candidates, because typically that's what a political candidate does, is they promise you the sun, the moon, the planets, and the entire universe, and they deliver hardly anything back, because they don't commit, they don't fulfill those campaign promises. Trump was a different kind of character in a lot of ways, because he not only put them out there, but he took personal interest in the fact that he was fulfilling the list, just as a good CEO executive would do, that they fulfilled the list and delivered upon whatever the objectives or the goals were going to be of the project ahead. His were to bring back, make America great again. And he did that in a lot of ways prior to the handy dandy virus and all of the things that has transcended our nation since then at this very moment. You know, Michael, this whole thing with Barr really gets under a lot of people's skin. And because now with John Durham, and I think it should not be lost on anybody that you realize with a Biden presidency, all of this goes away. All of these investigations are going to close right down. So Barr thinks he's doing us a favor, because he now makes John Durham, he promotes him and says, you're going to be my special counsel and our special counsel to get to the truth on the whole Russia collusion thing. So we're still, here's what really should rub everybody the wrong way. How dysfunctional are we? We're still debating the 2016 campaign, and we're now putting a special counsel in place for somebody who didn't deliver, because John Durham tells the American people, well, he didn't want to be viewed political, so he didn't come up with his findings before the election, and he'd punt till after the election, he said. And you just can't make this stuff up, Michael. You can't make this stuff up. And now they are going to get away with the biggest heist in American history.
I guess we're going to see, but I mean, a lot of things I don't like about this whole thing. Number one is, if you need a special counsel, you do it right away. Why, you know, I mean, I don't. So, for instance, the case for the special counsel is strong now, but it was back all the way when Durham was appointed. Why put Durham in a position that doesn't give him all of the empowerment associated with special counsel that likely even stems beyond his and brings singular focus and resources that he likely doesn't have in the current role. Second, you're saying we should be happy with this designation of Durham as special counsel, but am I alone in noticing the little footnote on the coverage of the timing of this, that the decision to appoint him as special counsel actually was many a couple months ago. And so they could have announced when they did it that Durham was being appointed a special counsel, which would have messaged the American people that we were taking seriously the issue of Obama, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, FBI, DOJ corruption during the 8 years of Obama. But instead, they appointed him special counsel and chose not to announce the designation of that position until after the election. Yeah. Again, I guess what I'm saying is that what they depict as depoliticizing legal initiatives is really the total politicization of them.
It's the hypocrisy of it all.
Meaning, in the ideal world, politics should almost not be a consideration at all as it relates to any of these things. Elections, I mean, and there are constraints that are placed on them, which themselves should really be assessed. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, there were things that Durham was limited from being able to do within those first, within the weeks leading up to the election. Well, why? I mean, if these are criminal activities and they're significant, if you have a department that has the confidence in American people, an AG who has the confidence in the American people, and you have a track record of arbitrating without of navigating these issues without political bias, there's nothing to worry about. People are going to say the facts are the facts. You can't say that about federal justice in this country anymore.
No.
And that's an extraordinary confession.
No, we're in uncharted waters for sure in that area. And I think about everybody I know has lost total confidence and faith in anything to do with justice. Again, as I say, Michael, if she's blind, she needs to take the damn mask off, because I'm not buying it, man. I'm not buying it at all.
Well, and some of the, you know, even on these election issues, we're looking at them from the standpoint of the effect that they had on the electoral outcome. And that's understandable, because we don't want to see Biden sworn in January 20th if he did not receive 270 electoral college votes in a free and fair way. Though I believe retroactive remedy, if there was fraud, has no statute of limitations here, in my judgment.
Said that before. You know, I thought about that just this morning in the first hour. You were on my mind with that, because you've said that before, that there shouldn't be any, statute on that basis, meaning that if whatever was going to be uncovered later on, if it came up, what would you do then? You'd have a whole Biden presidency, you'd have his whole cabinet. You'd have to what? Push that all out of Washington? I mean, this would be something that's...
Well, this would go... Wow. These would be Article II constitutional questions that would confront federal courts, obviously at a Supreme Court level. But look, let's take the alternative. Let's assume I'm wrong, because the only alternative thesis is that you would have demonstrable evidence acknowledged either by courts or by state legislatures or other bodies of accountable government that concluded that he did not, in fact, win 270 electoral votes. Then we leave him in as president of the United States?
No. But what would happen is, what we're defining right now is absolutely, I believe, a constitutional crisis that would
develop.
There's
not a lot of conversation about it, though. There's not a lot of conversation.
No, not at all. There's no conversation about it. Not a lot. There's none. Zero. Other than you and I haven't raised it, it's not out there anywhere that I've seen. But that could very well happen after the fact. And, you know, it's, you know, if they're not, let's say this, Michael, if they're not buying into it now, they're not going to buy into it later, no matter what you uncover or what you find, because, again, this is a heist.
But think about
this
what you're saying.
Exactly. Right, well, I know what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, you know, and by the way, this is a point that a lot of people probably haven't considered. But when you ponder the magnitude of Barr's statement and the impact that it has.
Right.
People, I think we're only looking on a surface level, and they say, well, what do you mean there's no evidence? We see all this evidence. Okay, you're right about that. But it's even worse than that, because if you really dive down and you now ponder all of these district and federal judges who still are yet to hear these cases, who are going to have to, I guess, you know, hear them out, you would think in an objective way and render objective rulings on them. We're now to understand they're not influenced by the fact that the highest law enforcement official in the country has said that there's no evidence of outcome altering fraud. You can't tell me that your typical judge out there who hears these cases is not a little bit influenced by that statement. All of a sudden, because, you know, he could have come out and said because here would be the statement that should have been made. We're very concerned about the allegations of election fraud that are emerging in multiple states around this country, some of which are, you know, at the heart of how our system operates, and we're going to get to the bottom of it. That would have been a really responsible statement. That there's no, of course there's no evidence, you haven't done anything.
The one thing I've learned through this whole process up to this point right now is that I mean this truly and honestly, we are sincerely no better than any other banana republic. Truly, Michael, I say that. And the only way we're better is we think we're better and we think we are, but we're not. And let me give you a case in point here, please. Take a look, Michael, at the 2016 election between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton as an example here. Now, in that race, President Trump, Donald Trump, took the establishment completely by surprise. He totally outfoxed everybody in this particular race. It's a historical race that will go down in the archives of United States history forever. It'll be the one race they'll talk about hundreds of years from now, if we're still here as the United States of America. And I have my doubts at this very moment, sadly. But looking at that race, Michael, in 2016, he took just shy of 63 million votes, okay? And Hillary Clinton took just shy of 66 million votes, again, because of California, New York, and Illinois, of course, the states that have been indoctrinated into a communist program already. And where he outfoxed them all is he played all the swing states perfectly, and they were all caught with their pants down. He got 304 electoral votes. Hillary Clinton got 227. Done. Case. Wow. Everybody was shocked, aghast. It was a moment in history. Everybody said, wow, he caught them. But our country's been sort of a runaway train at this point. We're headed in the wrong direction. Now you take a look here at 2020. They already know his game plan. They already knew what he was going to do. They already knew he was draining them. They were already gurgling for breath and to breathe, Michael. They've had 4 years of trying to outfox and get Donald Trump out of office, and God knows they've tried everything. They've tried from being the 25th Amendment, the guy's mentally deranged, to a full out right in the public square of an impeachment. And every other catastrophe and scandal you could possibly think of have been beset in those 4 years. Now we come to this election in 2020, Michael, and what happens? Well, they outfox him. They take all the swing states, they get insurance policies, and they set up with all these scandals, what you call affidavits, evidence, all this BS, and they load it up, and they push Biden across, who is just, and let's be honest, people. I'm going to say something that's not really nice, but he's on his deathbed. He doesn't have long here. The guy looks about as ill and frail. He's on his deathbed. I mean, this is a president who's not going to be here. He's not making 4 years. He might not make 4 months. I mean, and so who the hell are we kidding at this point? You see? And so that's what you got now, Michael. And now he gets what? Yeah. You know, 230. This is bullshit is what this is. This is a total scam if there ever was one. And that's what we're living with.
And this is where you see the disconnect from sensible people like yourself who are properly outraged, reflecting on the history of 230 years of representative democracy and all the sacrifices from the first, you know, shots in Concord and Lexington to this day.
Amen.
And those who just kind of, you know, I think in the swamp are looking at it from selfish political standpoints or just, you know, are ambivalent about it. And the conclusion is that our leaders are not rising to this moment, which gets to this leadership crisis that I'm describing. And it should be, and I think this is going to be a reset moment for the conservative movement. And it should be an inspiration for grassroots conservatives to start realizing who are we to blame? Who's in charge? Who's responsible for these things? Well, we ultimately all are. We ultimately all have to stand up and debate. You get the government that you demand and that you work for. And too many Americans for too long have sat on the sidelines, allowed these things to go through. Let me just bring this by you because this is new since we last talked. Dominion Voting Systems receives $400 million in October 2020 into its holding firm from a China-linked investment sources. And this is a complicated story because it involves holding companies and it involves a number of Chinese Communist Party affiliated investment firms into this.
I've heard rumblings of that. This is true.
I'm going to be bringing some clarity to this week. Because you can't say there's nothing there.
All right.
And you can't say China owns Dominion.
Hmm.
But you got $400 million in a UBS holding company that is smaller. You know, so it's like that $400 million is consequential investment into this holding company. And they in turn, you know, because this question emerged because no one could answer it back in the Chicago case with Dominion about who owned this company. Mm-hmm. They're counting our votes.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, if they're counting, you know, isn't that part of the due diligence process of sort of acquiring an election voting system that you understand who the owners are and you're comfortable with it? Apparently not. Because literally after the first issues emerged, and they were issues raised by Democrats like Elizabeth Warren and others over Dominion, no one could answer the question of who owned this company. And now only more recently after the 2020 election have we gotten into the fact that, well, we still don't really know definitively who owns it because it's a holding company with various investors, mm-hmm. but a large percentage of those investors, at least to the tune of $400 million of which was put in by Chinese entities. There is no Chinese private sector. Mm-hmm. CCP controlled entities.
All government. That's a great point. Do me a favor. As you begin to peel that onion more so, I want to get right to the airwaves with you on that because I've heard rumblings of this, and this really is under my skin. Let's find out everything we can about this.
I have the SEC documents.
This is huge.
Yeah, the SEC documents.
This is big.
The filings that were associated with this $400 million investment. It came.
God love you, Michael.
And
God
they filed the. They filed the Form D, which is the. Wow. SEC requirement.
This is great reporting on you. I mean, you got to find it. We got to bring that out because I've heard different pieces of it, but what you're telling me right now is more convincing than what I've heard from what you're saying. We just need to verify, cross the T's and dot the I's, and we should blow the horn as loud as we can on that one, buddy. You know?
Well, and where are we? This is when I say there's a leadership crisis because the time to be looking into this is not now when we've got serious, credible allegations that this system was manipulated for the purposes of Biden's benefit and Trump's defeat, but when these decisions were made to put these systems in the first place. For starters, some of these are just broad to be federal law. Okay, there should be no foreign systems involved in counting U.S.-based elections. You see, U.S.-based companies, all right? I'm not, you know, there's roles for foreign products, and I'm not a, you know, America only. You know, I understand it's a global economy, all these things, but this is not an area.
But this is our voting. This is our voting.
Okay, but now, so it's not only, hey, $400 million goes into the holding company from China, you know, which uses money and is known to use money routinely to influence the world and institutions and companies. But the fact that you have votes being sent to Frankfurt, Germany and Barcelona, Spain to be what? I mean, just like who is looking at that system and saying that's I'm comfortable with that? And by the way, why are those people not being confronted? Right? Because this isn't just an issue of, gee, someone, this broad entity, everyone assumes it's the Biden campaign, but it could be anyone, intervened in a conscious criminal enterprise all to mm-hmm. clearly move votes in a major way. Yeah. But the question is, like, where are the people who made this decision? I pointed out $1.4 billion went into the Republican Party. The Republican National Committee, the Senate Republican Campaign Committee, and the NRCC.
And what they do with that money?
Apparently $0 was allocated. Well, I don't know this from fact.
Voter integrity.
But it looks like nothing was invested into anyone overseeing the fact that the votes that these people in the party went out to actually cast were cast accurately.
The most important thing.
Yeah. So like in my view, just trying to speak openly and honestly right now is hold on a second. We got we're going to support putting this woman back in charge of the RNC, Ronna McDaniel, for another term. Based on what? She's just lost an election. She lost the 2018 off-year election. Mm-hmm.
That's a good question.
It's clear to me they put out a whole bunch of campaign managers around this country who had no mm-hmm. business running major campaigns. Right. And we have an election fraud issue that happened on her watch. On what basis specifically are we saying that is where that's my message to people right now in the Republican Party. This is your party, okay? Right. You know, if you're sympathetic with it, if you're supportive of it, if you're registered in it, you determine what it is. You determine on a county level, on a state level, and ultimately on a national level. If you're not comfortable with the direction in which it's going, mm-hmm. you don't disengage, you up your engagement.
Yeah.
It's there's too many people that want to run away from it, talk about third parties. I'm telling you, it's way too difficult, way too complicated, and probably only helps Democrats.
Well, it's a moment of truth. It's a moment of truth for the Republican Party, for sure. Something's going to have to give here as this thing happens. Let me throw this little quandary at you, Michael. I'd like you to think about a moment here. It's interesting. Our colleague and somebody I know who you admire a great deal, and I do as well, Dr. Carol Swain, I'm speaking of, okay? She put a tweet out, very brief. It says this, one thing we are witnessing is the humbling of America. We can no longer point a self-righteous finger at other nations. We are as corrupt and evil as our favorite punching bags. I wonder what Putin is thinking, or Xi Jinping for that matter. But so let me
say, I can answer that question. They're ecstatic.
Well,
if you look at the state-controlled media apparatuses in Russia, China, and elsewhere in the world that have not been our friends, their message for decades now has been, we're not as great as we say. Look at all the unsolved problems in America. Look at their poverty problem. Look at the drug addiction problem. Look at how their educational metrics and scores don't match up to other places in the world with less resources. Pulling down America has been a big part of it. Right. And of course, one of our frustrations with Obama when he first came in is he went around the world and validated.
Apologizing for every damn thing that was
we're
America.
We're not all that great.
Yeah. Well, Germany, excellence, France, excellence, England, excellence, all of this. That guy was a crackpot, I'll tell you. Well, let me tell you what.
When you come in as president of the United States and you were, and the world as it really exists is unfolded to you, and you look at it, you do identify some imperfections. But here's what is perfect, is that we're allowed to have this conversation, and we're allowed to take the steps necessary to resolve these things.
To resolve it and to fix it.
Which is why this matters, because ultimately, once you get a government that's not accountable to the people, now all of a sudden, that person who didn't win those votes in the first place is not going to care about
That's what makes this moment so important. And the conversations I'm having on air and off air with Michael, for instance, are exactly to this point, because when we talk off air all the time, we talk about the movement and trying to get momentum out there, which is where we really need help from all of you out there to be able to really build this thing bigger and better so we can make a difference, make the movement. Michael, that quandary or that tweet I just threw out to you about Dr. Swain about this, and what I referenced earlier in the program about the Banana Republic kind of conversation, which is a bit trite and, you know, somewhat, but it really references that tweet that she put out there. Well, let me just say to you this. I you know, and I think you'll appreciate this, Michael. I threw that same tweet and quandary at Dr. James Mitchell up front in the first hour viewpoint. And I really respect him because he's such an interesting man to talk to. And he came back and he said to me this, Malcolm. He said, you know, assessing everything where it's at right now, the way I would answer that, Malcolm, is this is an opportunity. It's a moment of opportunity for us to get it right, to do exactly what you kind of just said, what makes America different. And he referenced that as America's moment of opportunity, which I think is sort of what you're kind of saying as well.
Yeah, well, you know, and then, so I think I mentioned this briefly, but in the 1990s, I worked at a place called the International Republican Institute. It's one of four institutes, one affiliated with the Democrat Party, one with labor unions, and one with private sector and the Chamber of Commerce that mobilizes around the world to assist countries and people within those countries in establishing representative democracy. And this is funded by our State Department, and it's funded by our U.S. Agency for International Development. Lots of public money goes in it. There's periodically been some moves to get rid of it. But this entity is out there operating as I always thought was the case, as you probably thought was the case, that you know, we sort of had this democracy thing nailed down. We knew everything that was involved in it. We understood not just the election part of it, but we understood how a civil society works. We understood the need for women's rights around the world. We understood the need for independent media and, you know, the accountability that that provides, when it's the balance of powers, constitution, rule of law, not allowing courts to be politicized. We're now sitting here just having, you know, an hour long conversation about how just about every one of those things is gone in this country. We don't have an independent media any longer. We have a media that is very much in the corner of the Democrat Party. I mean, if it was owned by the Democrat Party, would it operate any differently? Ask yourself that question. What, maybe a little bit, but not fundamentally differently, I don't think.
No, it's been a slow boil. It's been a slow boil, Michael. They've taken over so much. In fact, I was having that conversation up with Bradley Devlin, the Daily Caller, up front of the first hour as well. And it's been a slow boil. He talks about the indoctrination and what they're teaching in the schools and the education of the kids, and he gets all of that. And he talks about the professors and where what they're preaching and why they're doing it. And we're in a heap of trouble. And then you say, well, he referenced this probably two or three generations now that have been indoctrinated so badly that they look at all this as fair game right now. They're not seeing the grievance of a fair election and what that means. And they're also thinking that, you know, we really don't need the Electoral College. We're happy just to have the popular vote, get rid of the Electoral College. And he thinks they're going to be rebuking that more and more ahead. Pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah. I think so. I think there's going to be substantial questions, and there should be. And I've raised even bigger ones about whether the two-party system itself is really serving us any longer, because I just got done telling you, as a lifelong Republican since the age of 18, you know, with my first point of entry really into American public life and public policy, that I'm not satisfied with what this party's doing or what they're becoming. I don't, you know, I don't think Trump has the control he believes he has on this party. I don't believe he has the control on this government that he believes that he has. It's one thing if we're now at a point where we're down to weeks in his presidency, it really, one of the biggest messages is he's got to get out and speak the truth to the people about what he's learned. You know, don't hold back. Don't wait for your book. Don't hold it back. Don't worry about your book royalties. Spell it out now and take action now.
Well, actually, right? You know what? You say that. I've actually heard reports from, I think it's Brennan. I could be, maybe it's one of the other clowns. I don't know. There's quite a few in the clown car there. But I think it was Brennan who said, and I'm pretty sure it was actually, he said he was very concerned of what President Trump will say out of office because he knows too much and he's afraid he's going to share things with the American people. Can you believe that?
Yes, well, I do believe in it, and I believe that it's actually a legitimate concern, because I think this gets to the core of the problem they've had with Trump from day one. I don't think they have very hardened views about many domestic policy issues. I think the issue was they knew the president of the United States would be entitled to an extensive book of highly classified secrets about how our government functions and has functioned for decades, and that he, unlike the past club, the president I worked for ran the CIA. He was trustworthy. Others who came in were sort of surrounded by those same type. They
changed
were worried about that, and they are worried about it. And some of those things, you know, we there's a need for classification. I mean, I'm not beyond that, but there's a lot of things that are classified that probably shouldn't be.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, we have reached the end of this program. Thank you, buddy. It's a good conversation.
Thank you.
This hour is the fastest hour. It really does. Every time we get started, it's like it feels like it's 5 minutes, but it actually is 60 minutes.
We get to call it the fastest hour in American radio.
The fastest hour. And that's exactly it, buddy. And it's good here. Yeah.
Get involved with America Out Loud. Follow the podcast. You know, I think we both can commit, can't we, Malcolm, that will be a centerpiece of the solution going forward. We're going to figure this thing out. You know, it'll happen incrementally. But you know, we can't do it alone.
As Michael just said, and as you know, Dr. James Mitchell said up top of the program, it's an opportunity at the end of the day for America to get it right. It's going to take a lot of us to get hands on deck to make that happen, people. But listen, I tell you every day I talk to you, I tell you on the weekly program, I tell you on the weekends, it's time to get involved and get loud. And why do I say that? Because I really, truly believe that in my heart. We can't be bystanders sitting on the sidelines. We have to get involved in the game. This is our country. It's our republic. It's ours to win or lose. So again, I'll end you here and say this. It's time to get involved and get loud.